Hi. Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you some new engineering today. Michael G. Haskins is not with us. We may have a glitch or two that we have to pull together. In the studio with me, Roberta Maria Atti. Hello, Roberta. Whoops, let's see where that is. There it is. Hi.
Hello, Armand.
Hey, yesterday we were talking about the what we call the four horses of the apocalyptic relationship, the four signs of the destruction of a relationship falling apart, usually a relationship heading towards divorce, physical divorce, emotional divorce. It doesn't have to be the kind of divorce where you go to the courts. And we were looking at the four signs, the four things that usually appear. Talking about criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling as the four signs. Yesterday we discussed criticism. I gave you a test with 12 questions to see if you would be considered critical in your last argument. Are you someone who is critical with your mate? Is your mate critical with you? Are your discussions around being critical? Is that the way it works, critical arguments? Because if you have arguments where you're criticizing each other, it generally does not survive. Because criticism doesn't usually yield clarity. Nothing happens in them. Remember, every couple has its complaints, which is just a sign that, you know, you have differences as two different humans. Two people get together and they're bringing with them differences. But how you handle those differences is what makes the difference in a lasting or an ending relationship. So, looking at it, being able to disagree with things, to argue about, to disagree on, but you may have to live with disagreements for a long time. You may have to live with the grief of not getting your way for a long period of time. But people still have that to be okay in relationships, and the relationships survive all that. You don't need arguments on everything. But when you do want to get something out, when there is a difficulty in argument, you do want to approach that argument. How do you do it? How do you deal with it? And the four things that happen with disagreements, both the criticism, contempt, and then the other two, the defensiveness and the stonewalling, are the things that will inevitably guarantee you that the relationship is not going to work. So how do we do it, my friends? What do we do? How do we deal with it? Today we're going to talk about the second element, which is called contempt. We're going to deal with it, and talk about what contempt is and how contempt is. And then we're going to be taking your calls a little later. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Contempt. Contempt is such an interesting thing. What is contempt? How does contempt work? Do you know what contempt is? Do you know the attitude? We actually developed a little test for you. You know, contempt is like criticism run wild. What are the characteristics of contempt? When do you fall into the trap of contempt? How is it triggered? Is there a particular person with whom you interact with a contemptuous response? What payoff do you get when you're contemptuous? There's a real question. I mean, do you feel relieved when you're nasty with somebody? Do you feel justified, vindicated, excused from relating? Whom have you witnessed displaying contempt from your childhood? There's a real good question. Think back to your childhood. Who was contemptuous when you were a kid? Which of your parents? Usually, anybody who is contemptuous had a contemptuous parent. A nasty parent. And even though that relationship may have lasted, it lasted with a lot of ugliness back then. Whom have you witnessed on the receiving end of contempt? what was that like to watch somebody on the receiving end of it? Now, I'm on DeMille with you. Contempt is one step up from criticism and involves tearing down or being insulting towards your partner. Contempt is an open sign of disrespect. Examples of contempt include putting down your spouse, rolling your eyes or sneering, tearing down the other person with so-called humor at their expense. We're going to talk more about it, and one would imagine that, you know, we'd say to ourselves, well, I would never do that, you know, I would never be contemptuous. Where would we ever get this from? Well, contemptuous is not so far-fetched because I've seen it a lot in a lot of different places, and I see it in a more primitive kind of way. Roberta, are there any examples of contemptuousness in nature?
Well, Armand, we certainly have examples of behavior that we could describe as contemptuous. For instance, an older animal in a community of animals in a pack of wolves, let's say, or a group of monkeys. Older individual versus younger individual, rivals, the territory becomes an issue. We could see contempt on either side. The older individual feels contemptuous or acts as if he felt contemptuous towards the younger one, or vice versa. Other times, an animal may display a contemptuous behavior towards a sibling. Again, this could be a rivalry. Or a species versus a different species. I mean, the proverbial dogs and cats, although that only applies in Italy. Did you know that, Armand?
No, tell me about that.
In the U.S., dogs and cats are actually very good friends. But in Italy, they aren't. They're very contemptuous towards each other. Now, again, could that be a rivalry thing? But you go to Italy, dogs and cats don't get along. Here they do. A predator may behave that way, or it seems that that the predator may feel that way towards prey. So contempt is a way of perhaps diminishing someone else or an individual. With an agenda. So contempt towards a rival is in order to get rid of the rival. Contempt towards a possible thief of food is in order to get rid of that rivalry. So it's always a form of aggression, a way of expressing, perhaps a way of displaying a stronger attitude towards something.
And displaying the attitude without necessarily jumping in with a full aggression.
Right.
By sneering, you know what I mean? It's like it's a way of saying, you know, like let's say a male wanted to mate with a female, and the female had her eye on another male. She might be contemptuous towards the male that wanted to mate with her by snapping at it, by sneering at it, by growling at it, by rejecting it, by turning it down, right? And, you know, snipping at it because she really has this other male in mind without her full attack on this animal.
Right.
But that kind of contempt says, you know, get away from me. And it's almost a silent way of saying get away from me. And one could see in human relationships that it's almost a primitive way of being to be contemptuous with other people.
It's a way of rejecting someone. It's a way of letting someone know they're not welcome around us. It's a way of letting someone know we don't need them. But it's also a way, I think, Armand, of not feeling other things. In other words, if I'm sad, for instance, about a certain relationship, it might be easier to feel contemptuous rather than sad. Let's say our relationship is ending, as you're pointing out. Sometimes these are things we feel at the end of a relationship. So let's say, rather than to feel sadness, grief, loss, someone might switch and feel contemptuous in order to not fall apart.
Didn't you do a lot of work with people who are ill, fatally ill? You've worked with terminally ill people.
Mm-hmm, yes, and sometimes they're very contemptuous towards the medical system, for instance.
Why? How do the people who are contemptuous fare? How do they do compared to the people who will be more accepting?
Right. It depends, Armand. Very often people who are angry with the, you know, medical establishment or medical system fare better than people who are more passive and feel more impotent, more powerless. Because, as I said before, to be contemptuous may very well be a choice one makes in order to feel stronger. In other words, if I'm a patient with a serious illness and I'm angry about it and contemptuous of the doctor who's not able to cure me, I may have more energy to fight this illness than someone who is resigned to it and who just says, well, okay, this is the end and I'm just going to let myself die.
So sometimes just having this nasty attitude, and I can remember times in my life when I felt completely powerless, where I've been either through a surgery or gone through an illness, where there was just a nasty part of me that came up and I was like resenting everything.
That may very well be a mechanism of keeping yourself stronger in the face of something you might have perceived as potentially very dangerous or very upsetting.
And if you, even if there was no danger, to have engendered that danger by bringing up this contemptuous feeling gets my entire mechanism to be working for battle. And there are many people, there are many people I know who have fought cancer, who they find the contemptuous people very often are the ones who survive much better than the people who have just accepted the cancer, whether it's contemptuousness towards the establishment, the medical establishment, or just in general, a general miserable attitude. Sometimes a growling person will survive better than a person who is whimpering.
Right, because contempt, I think from the inside, gives a sense of support. If I'm contemptuous of my illness, or of my fate, of my fear, of my sickness, of my feeling nauseous, if I'm contemptuous of that, it may feel that I'm less at the mercy of this event than if I'm just suffering with it. Contempt gives me one hand up. What's the word? What's the way to describe that? Gives me a sense of having some control over how I feel about something. And usually things that we feel contemptuous about are things that we don't feel we have the power to control in any other way.
Now, the interesting thing about being a human and being in an adult relationship is it doesn't work in adult relationships when you have another human you could speak to, because communication would be far more effective. But when you don't feel you have the power of that communication, when you don't feel that your communication could be effective, when you feel powerless, that's when contemptuousness can take its place. And we're talking about the four different signs of a disaster in a relationship, with the first one being this mutual criticism and the second one being contemptuousness.
And if you think about it, Armand, what purpose could it serve in a relationship that's already in trouble to be contemptuous of the of your partner? It couldn't really serve a purpose of making the relationship easier or better, because anytime you bring in that much negativity, of course, you're probably worsening the situation. But what it does do is give you a sense that you have some control over the loss of this important investment that you've made, you know, on someone else. So I think it's a way to keep ourselves from falling into that abyss, you know, of despair.
To not understand something is one thing. To say to yourself, I don't understand, I'm confused by, I need to understand. To take a judgmental role, that's a different thing. To take the position of I don't understand. Hey, you know, by the way, yesterday I was talking about having been invited to a bris, and I was talking about how I have a personal misunderstanding of circumcision, how I don't understand the whole idea of circumcision and how circumcision takes place. And personally, it touches me at a level where I feel like the act, it's an act of brutality. I've gotten quite a few calls, some of which were actually hateful calls, telling me that I was anti-Jewish for having made the statement that I personally feel that way about circumcision. Do you feel that way about circumcision, too?
Absolutely. I think that circumcision, if it's necessary for someone's religious belief at least could be done at an age and at a time when the recipient has a choice and when the recipient is not as vulnerable as a newborn baby.
Well, maybe there's something we don't understand about it. Some of the objections that we received were near violent. So maybe there is something I don't understand. That, you know, Shelton Walden, one of our BAI producers, has presented many different opinions on circumcision. And I think I'm going to be in touch with him to take a look. That was brought to my attention by an old friend, Monroe. I want to take a look at it a little further. But the interesting thing was how much contempt it brought up in some of the people who heard me talking about it as my personal opinion and my personal reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yet, of course, I'm not contemptuous about people who practice as they practice.
Mm-hmm.
Back to contempt, and here we are. Contempt is criticism run wild. Now, the partner's remarks are not only critical, but they're intended to insult and psychologically abuse as well.
Mm-hmm.
You may not just have the intention, because when you get critical, you may not mean necessarily to do it, but it just kind of pops out when you're talking to somebody. You don't necessarily mean to be so contemptuous, and you don't mean to do it, but you say something like you're wrong, and it comes out you're stupid, you know, contemptuous.
But you see, one of the dynamics, I think, of contempt is precisely to have a shift of power. So I think that we often feel contemptuous of someone or something that we perceive as having the capacity to hurt us and therefore in some way stronger or bigger than we are. Well, contempt allows us to even out the situation in some way, because even if this person or event can hurt us, but we can hurt them by rejecting them and putting them down and diminishing their value verbally, out loud, well, then we kind of make ourselves a little bit more even with the power they have over us.
And, of course, it doesn't work. Words such as you're fat, you're ugly, you jerk, you wimp, things that could be in the conversation before you, that are just nasty words. You know, or then you could use those words like you're somebody who never or you're somebody who always. And the extension of the criticism gets so big that name-calling, hostile expressing, and you see names start coming in. You're just a baby, and mockery. There are clear signs of contempt.
See how all those names that you just listed, Aman, behind all those descriptions, do you see that desire to diminish the other person,
sure,
to make them smaller?
In some way, because you must feel powerless. You must in some way feel powerless at the moment. You know, a very brilliant person said that all expressions of contempt are a form of self-contempt, meaning in some way that you have to be feeling weak yourself to be doing it that way. You have to be hating yourself on some level to be so hateful. But you're out of control. What happens when two people get into mockery and expressing, they convey a collapse of respect for each other. Now, there's a big issue. When respect is lost, you can see it very often. We as therapists meet couples who come in, and you'll interview couples, and the couple will have one person or another will always be contemptuous. And you can see one person wants to change things, and the other one is just contemptuous. They're filled with this ugly kind of feeling. And when you have that, you've got to do something to melt the contempt, because contempt is just one way out of a relationship. If the contempt exists, somebody is saying, I want the exit door. I don't want to try because I don't want to be hurt, because I feel too soft and too tender. Contempt could just happen at certain times. Let's say a man is hormonally affected in some way. Let's say it's the cycle of the moon, where he's a little more irritable than at other times, which is possible. Let's say he's got other stuff which is affecting him chemically, or his diet is affecting him. Let's say he's overworked, over-fatigued, and he's just taking too much sugar in, he drinks too much coffee. Or similarly, it might happen to a woman, of course, but let's say his body is working against him and he becomes nasty. Or you wake him up in the middle of the night and he's not used to being waken in the middle of the night. he drinks too much coffee, or he may have had too much to drink predictably. The person who loves him can recognize it, but let's say you can't distance yourself enough from it. You look at this person who's just acting nasty, and then somehow they turn the nastiness on you. That's possible. That's an occasional contemptuousness. That's not overall. That kind of goes along with the person's mood. It's like a form of PMS, you know? It's like a person is just in a nasty mood, if it's a nasty kind of mood, and they're in a nasty mood and you just happen to get the way. But when I see the contempt stays in the relationship and it becomes conditional, because the contempt kind of goes away as soon as the person settles down, that's a good thing. But there's a lot of damage. Contempt is not the end of a relationship, but it's a sign that the relationship is in serious trouble. Think back on bad days. Even in the best relationship, couples can stoop to contempt, but the couple is not likely to last if the disagreements can sink down to that knockdown, drag-out kind of fighting, where you're screaming at each other and you start calling each other names. Name-calling is that sign. When people start calling each other names, you know, because some of these words, and I'm sure every one of you have heard them, the words like disgusting, and words like that, or wimp, or weak, or stuff that just penetrates, and it never leaves your brain, and it hurts you so much, and the words don't leave, and they stay with you. Hey, we've put together a number of statements, and if you agree, just check them off. Maybe if we take a survey, you could ask yourself if you have contempt. Here's question number one. During the argument, when I was having my last argument with my mate, I didn't think of a single thing that I admired in my partner. Now, that's a very interesting thing. You're having an argument with your mate. Do you admire them at that moment? Now, I think about somebody I love, and I'm having an argument. And if we're having an argument, I always see something I love in that other person. If during an entire argument I don't see anything I love, I don't even see it for a moment, that's very notable. Think to yourself, did you lose sight of everything that you've admired in your partner? Do you lose your love when you argue? When you're arguing, do you have no idea of the love that you feel? Why can't you argue with someone and then remember that this is your friend you're arguing with? This is the person you love that you're arguing with. Why can't you go there? Of course you do, and most of you do. During an argument, could you think of a single thing that you admire in your partner? Imagine having an argument with somebody that you're having a real argument with, but you're still admiring them. You still love their integrity, you love their depth, you love their beauty, you love something about them. Imagine that. Imagine. And you're still fighting with them. If you can't love anything about them, that's a sign of contempt. That's a sign that you need contempt to bolster you, that you've got to shut out your love in order to have the argument because you're afraid you'll never be able to stay in the argument. Here's a second question. When you get upset with your partner, do you focus on their glaring faults? Do you suddenly notice how overweight they are? Do you suddenly notice their skin? Do you suddenly notice about the glaring faults in their character? That they don't talk right, that they just don't have things right? It's kind of a crossover, you know? You talk about criticism as a kind of an attack on a person's character. Very often, certainly, this particular quality of contemptuous argument, you are looking at the person, and while you're arguing with them, you're looking at their faults at the same time. You're resenting the very person that's there. Not only are you not loving them, but you're also feeling disgusted by some of what is. Roberta made a statement before that she doesn't think that animals truly feel contempt. Do you remember your argument about that, Roberta?
Yes, I do.
Because of the missing feeling of what?
the animal is not going to feel superior like a human would as a defense strategy. The animal either is superior physically, you know, in strength or in intelligence, but that's not the reason why an animal may act contemptuous. The contemptuousness in an animal is more of a form of aggression and a form of establishing boundaries and establishing hierarchies. But in humans, it often takes on this connotation of disgust and being better than the object of our contempt.
So one of the things you're saying is that among animals, you don't get this feeling of revulsion and disgust, which humans feel, which is why you say, therefore, that contempt is perhaps the wrong word for it, because it's in a human quality, there's a kind of a feeling of revulsion and disgust for the other person.
But that's what's necessary to use contempt as a defense, as an emotional defense. That's probably the most important ingredient, the feeling superior to the other.
We're talking about the four horsemen of the apocalyptic relationship, the four things that happen when people are headed downhill fast. We spoke of criticism yesterday. Today we're speaking about contempt. My co-host, Roberta Maria Atti. James Ballin was to be with us today, and he couldn't make it today. Tomorrow we're going to talk about defensiveness, and then after that we're going to talk about stonewalling, the last 4-1. But we're going to take a little further look. Statement number 3. During the argument that you have, you try to point out to your partner how foolish they were in certain situations. Now, this is an attempt to make your partner feel humiliated. Did some part of you want to humble your mate, your partner, your friend, to whip them into some kind of submission by reminding them of something they did that was humiliating or stupid or wrong? Did you want to crack their spine at some level? Did you feel that kind of argument that you almost, it's almost like you hate this person and you're arguing with them and then you remind them about something that they did badly? You know? Contemptuous. Number 4, you find yourself putting your partner down. You know what I mean to put somebody down? Do you do that in your last argument? And the fifth one is, my partner can be incredibly arrogant at times. Do you notice that your partner is arrogant? So here, in your noticing your own contemptuousness, you will focus on your partner's arrogance, not yours, but theirs. You will see them as being arrogant. And that will justify your desire and your need to kind of respond to them. So what you do is you feel arrogant back. So you notice their arrogance. And number 6 is, once I noticed my partner's arrogance, I keep finding myself thinking of insulting things to say. I think of, while we're in the argument, insulting things to say. During the argument, my partner can be incredibly argumentative at times, means that your partner fighting back with you and you resent it. And then you see them at fault for being arrogant, for even fighting back with you. You're in an argument where both of you are being arrogant, but you notice your partner's arrogance, and you focus on that. That's contempt.
Isn't it also making someone's fault or defect bigger than what it is, so that you have more to be contemptuous about?
Absolutely.
Inflating the fault. And
absolutely. What poor humans we are when we get to this level. Absolutely. Hey, this is Armand DeMille. It is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. It is exactly 1:30. We're going to take a short break because many of you are out there. And here's something special for a number of people today, which I felt like playing. And we're going to be back right after this little break here. Just cut it like that. Where are we? And there we are. There it is. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Something's happening here. Huh. Hey, I'll be right back with your little engineering difficulty. I'll be right back with you. Back with you. That was a little interesting little glitch. So we're talking about contemptuousness. There we are. Hey, we're talking about contemptuousness, and we're talking about some of the arguments. We're talking about, let me just see, this goes up, that goes up, that goes there, Roberta, right?
Not yours.
No, okay. That's down. Here we go. We're talking about arrogance, and we want to take some of your calls on this, on the whole issue of contemptuousness is not. Now, you're kind of blaming your partner for the argument. You know, this idea of self-contempt. When you get to the point where you're really feeling that nasty towards someone and you're arguing with somebody, it really is a painful thing. To see yourself being like that. It is painful to see yourself being ugly. I'm sure. I'm sure that most people really dislike it in themselves. Many people we know live on it. I've seen many people who just actually live on that kind of energy. They get to a certain point where nasty is their way of being, and it's all they ever do. Just plain nasty. Nasty, miserable people. And they go along being nasty, spitting at everybody, yelling at everybody, and it's just plain nasty.
Well, when I have found individuals that are always contemptuous, what I've discovered, Armand, is that it has become like a crutch, whereby by feeling contemptuous, this person can get through life without ever having to feel too weak or too inferior. You see, if a person is contemptuous of everyone, in some way the message is I'm better than they are because I can be contemptuous of them, of what they do, etc. And that is easier a feeling than thinking that we're just not good enough and not smart enough or not strong enough or not desirable enough or whatever it is that we're not enough.
You know, you remind me, Roberta, of the time you told me about the lion who went on the hunt, or the tiger went on the hunt, would use some of its hormones to cut off its compassion so that it could become more of an aggressor. And
right.
I think about one of the feelings of contemptuousness is you lose compassion for your partner.
And if I'm contemptuous also of a partner, I don't need their love, right?
So, I mean, you do really. You really do need their love.
But you don't feel that
but
you do.
But you shut it off.
Right.
So here's another question, number 7, about you, if you want to figure out if you're being contemptuous. During the time in your last argument with your partner, did you say, I had no respect for my partner? I didn't feel any compassion. I think, is that what this is really about? I don't feel any compassion for this human being. Did you cut off the compassion? Don't you care if they're bleeding? Or do you want them to bleed? Is that the idea? Do you want them to bleed? I have looked at parents talking to children in a contemptuous way, in such a contemptuous way, such a nasty way, I've looked at children talking to parents that way, too. That sometimes you wonder that they want to break the person on the inside. They want to hurt them so much they want to break them. They want to crack them. They want to destroy their mind. It's almost like there's a hatred that's boiling on the inside that's coming out. In order to do that, you cannot love and you cannot feel compassion. Now, Roberta, you bring up an interesting thing. You want that person to love you desperately.
Well, my observation has been that usually when we feel contempt for someone, what we really would like to have from them is their approval, admiration, affection, or even just for them to notice us. It's not, in my experience, contempt is not the same as truly finding someone inadequate or undesirable or a nuisance. Contempt very often is what we feel towards someone we really like, admire, and need, and we want them so much. But because we perceive that we're not quite good enough for them, then we protect ourselves from that feeling of rejection and inadequacy through making them, in our own eyes, inadequate, undesirable, etc. That's a strategy that works up to a point. As you pointed out, Armand, we can only lie to ourselves up to a point. I mean, eventually the true feeling always surfaces. And that sometimes calls for more contempt and more contempt and more contempt. There's a proverb in Bolognese. Those who reject purchase. Those who don't want something want it the most. Meaning that whenever you express contempt for something or someone, what you're expressing is a stronger than normal desire or appreciation for that very thing or person.
Strange things, strange ways that we behave towards each other.
Isn't it?
And to think that the contempt that we put there causes such bleeding inside ourselves. You know, I think about the old bumper sticker I once saw, which is so funny on one level because it makes a mockery of the 1960 slogan that says, you know, if you love something, let it go and let it roam the earth, and if it doesn't come back, you know.
If it doesn't come back, what happens?
Well, the original one was, if you love something, let it go. If it comes back, then it really belongs to you.
Oh.
The new slogan was, if you love something, let it go. If it doesn't come back, hunt it down and kill it.
You know, I was thinking about some of the most contentious individuals I have found are teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And even
mm-hmm.
in their music and in, you know, the lyrics of the new music, you'll find a lot of contempt. And that is, to me, easier to spot. It's easier for me to spot the need of this teenager population through that contemptuous verbal expression of it. It's easy to find the needy kid that through contempt is really saying, love me, love me, love me, love me, love me.
Well, now this is a very interesting thing because, you know, one of the signs of contempt among teenage children, or teenage, among that age group, is that they feel superior.
Mm-hmm.
They feel superior to their elders.
Yeah.
And you said before that contemptuousness is a sign of superiority, of a feeling of superiority. It's a sign of inferiority in many ways because you feel powerless.
Right.
To confront something directly and get what you want. But in another way, it's a sign of superiority because that's why you could look down and be that way towards somebody. You know, you could look down your nose at them and treat them with such disdain. The teenager who feels such contempt for society, contempt, now this is different than those of us who may object to society and feel a certain negative feeling towards our political, I don't know, is it different? I mean, what do I feel towards my government? Is that contempt? No, it's not contempt.
I think it is different, Armand, because one is much more reactionary than the other. To disagree with your government is one thing. To be contemptuous of it is much more reactionary than to disagree. So there's something at stake in contempt that may not be at stake in a simple divergence of opinion, you see. I think with content, there's always an unrequited need that is expressed through contempt.
There is also something about destroying. You know, once you feel contempt, and the beauty of about this teenage feeling, the contemptuousness is often expressed in, you know, graffiti, or destroying something, or making something ugly that might have been considered beautiful, or painting over a statue with paint.
Or self-mutilation can be an act of contempt as well.
Yes, and the idea here is to say to you, I have a right to destroy, and that there is a satisfaction in destroying. And there is something about that need of us that we have, that many of us have, that when we feel torn and ripped apart and so much in need, when you're in love with somebody who you feel has betrayed you, and you want to be close but you can't, and all you've got left is your contemptuousness, it's like there's a part of you rotting on the inside and another part of you that is hating and looking to seek revenge on another, because in a way, a part of you has been destroyed.
Yep.
When you've loved, and you thought that love was going to be simple, when you've married or you've coupled and you said, well, our love will carry us through, and then you find it took so much to make this relationship work, you start off trying to be with somebody and you find out the two of you are different, and you first start off with not knowing how to handle each other, and criticism starts coming your way and you start criticizing each other, and then after the criticism comes the contemptuousness, and now you're thinking about love. And you're saying, but love was going to carry us through this. Love is the thing that will make it work. And you find out that the love doesn't make it work. That the love goes away with the differences. And these are only the first two phases. Over the next few days, we're going to be discussing the other two, defensiveness and stonewalling, which really gets into the serious stuff as well. I kind of feel that that's what happens to people when they get into this level of contemptuousness. I think it's a good reason, too. I think that all these aspects of contemptuous relating are ploys to get back on top, just like you're saying, Roberta, and making people right again, justifying themselves again. And we think that because the ego or the I persona or the I self is such an enormous need to be right all the time, when it feels attacked, when it feels put down, when it feels that someone is saying, no, you're wrong and I'm right, it wants to get back on top. When it finds out that the plan didn't work, when it finds out that its very plan didn't work, that its idea of, wait a minute, if I just change my partner will be good. You know, very often people go into relationships and say, well, I'll just make him stop being that way. He won't want to live so much. He won't want to have so much partying. He won't want to do that. I'll just change him. My love will change him. And you find out it doesn't work that way. You get so angry. But part of what you get angry about is that manipulation didn't work, that your idea didn't work. And you feel so frustrated and angry. And part of it is this anger you feel at yourself, that your plan didn't work. You thought it would. You thought, aha, my love is so powerful, my giving is so powerful, it will achieve anything. And how could it not work? How could you be loved by me and not do everything I say or be the way I want you to be? How could you be such an individual? How could you be so different? How could you have your own needs or your own neurosis, your own addictions, your own sickness, your own stuff? How could you, after surviving me? My love is big enough to control you, to change you. And then you find out it's not. Oh, it's so sad. You get so angry.
So at that point, it's easier to think or to tell the other person you're a good-for-nothing whatever, rather than to say, God Almighty, I love you so much, I can't live without you. What am I going to do without you? Right? Is that what contempt?
Right.
That's been my experience, too, that contempt always hides this despair of having to put something or someone else down in order to survive the loss of them.
You know, you and I knew one client who had a male and a female persona. And he had this male persona who would come out very angry, very nasty, who would talk from the I don't need anybody persona.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had this other persona, which was her natural persona, which needed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever she felt threatened, boom, this guy would come up inside of her, and he was just in charge and tough and mean
and
nasty and totally contemptuous.
Of everyone, right?
Of everyone and everything.
Right.
He was like a teenager, you know?
But you see, that's probably what allowed that person to survive those times when she felt abandoned by everyone.
That's right.
How could she survive it in any other way?
Armand de Milroberta, Ati, we're talking about contemptuousness. If the attack is severe and if the ego feels truly annihilated, then it seems to be its only recourse is to attack big also, which it does, using a very big weapon. I'm not fond of these battle metaphors, but, you know, it is. It's a huge weapon to use when you feel utterly annihilated. Contempt does lead to a feeling of childishness. What does contempt do? When you have the kind of nasty criticism coming from someone, criticism automatically engenders a childlike feeling in a person. It makes you feel powerless because you're fighting against something that is just plain ugly and bigger than you are. And sometimes when you feel powerless, you actually want to physically hit it. How many people have physically struck out at those moments, you know? That's the time when the smaller of the two people will actually wield their fists, you know, pushing and shoving because they feel so small and frustrated. So what can you say about reducing you to a childlike, egocentric self? That makes a lot of sense. Listen, I hear what you're saying, but if you bare your soul to somebody who has contempt for you, they're going to use that to chop you up in pieces. Maybe you've got to say it to yourself. Well, let's look at the rest of the checklist before our time runs out. Here's a checklist of the way you behaved in your last argument, you or your partner. Number 9, I always have a sense of righteous indignation when my partner gets negative. Every time your partner gets a little wacky, some part of you is enjoying it. It's kind of intriguing. You feel good when your partner gets caught up in the wheel of frenzy. When your partner gets crazy, when they get very angry, or when they get out of control, there's a part of you that's smiling somewhere.
Well, wouldn't that out-of-control behavior justify contempt?
That's right.
And so that gives you a chance to say, see, I was right. You're
see,
a nutcase.
There they are. You're a nutcase. Absolutely right. You create the ugliness, and then you're happy it's there, right? Ah, what's the matter with us? All right. What fools we humans be? Hey, I skipped number 8. When my partner is upset with me, I think of all the ways I've been let down in the relationship. So here's another thing that people do when they're in an argument. When somebody is yelling at them, they automatically think of all the things that they were disappointed in. So they immediately take the past. In the middle of an argument, you look at them and you scan the past and you begin to remember all the bad stuff. You lied to me about that. You'd always say you'd be there, and now you're not. You pick up some little things. You forgot to do this for me. You said you were going to do this for me, and you never did it.
See, the thing is, see how easy it is to build up a case against someone? I mean, you can always build up contempt against anybody if you choose to.
The mind is an amazing thing.
But the question I do ask myself when I feel contemptuous is, okay, does this serve my purpose? Is it helping me? Is it making me feel good? Is it helping the relationship? Is it? And I'm not trying to make suggestions or to say how to handle contempt. I'm just saying, when it pops up, it's an interesting thing when it rears its head. Like if I'm being too critical of someone or contemptuous, I think it's worth asking myself what's going on with me.
Listen, friends, if we're looking for the answers, you would think of certain things for sure. Number 1, you definitely want to nurture your friendship. Do nothing that you wouldn't do to a great friend. You know, would you do this to your friend? You'll find 99% of the stuff that you do with your mate, you would never do with your best friend. treat your mate like a friend. Treat your mate like a friend that you would like to keep. Two, actively take steps to foster your liking and admiration of your partner. You know, you've got it. The antidote to contempt is to make sure in the middle of every argument that you could find that part of your partner that you admire. Even when you find yourself in the middle of their contempt for you or your contempt for them, to find the part of them that you admire, the beauty that's in there, because really you wouldn't even be in the middle of this if there wasn't something you loved. Number three, always behave if you can. Find the respectful place. In relationships that deteriorate over time, respect becomes significantly absent. Sadly, sometimes people end up treating their spouses worse than they would ever treat a complete stranger. That respect is very important. It's what you would minimally give a friend. Number four, accept and validate your partner. Recognize how much power you have to build up your spouse or to tear them down, regardless of what they're doing. And for now, my friends, we'll give you just this one more. Please forgive each other. When your partner genuinely reaches out to ask for forgiveness, don't turn away. That's one. But whether they do or not, when they're out of control, recognize they're out of control. In your heart, even if they've hurt you, even if they've struck out deeply at you, recognize that this part of them that's striking out so deeply is this hurt, lost child. And in some way, if you can, forgive them for what they're doing at the moment. If you can, find that forgiveness. Because people who are contemptuous with each other are children. They're just adolescents screaming out, you know. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind with Roberta Ati. We're going to be back with you tomorrow talking more about the stages of the relationship that doesn't work. And we'll be giving you more things that we think do work. If you wanted a copy of today's show, you would call 1-800-575-0580, 1-800-575-0580. If you wanted to reach Roberta Ati, you would reach her at Roberta4Health, that's with the number 4 in the middle, at AOL.com, right, Roberta?
Yes.
Roberta4Health at AOL.com. My office number, if you ever wanted to call us here, is 212-757-4488. That's a number of things. And my email address is armand@brainlink.com. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Thanks very much to the engineers at WBAI for dealing with an unusual situation. Be back with you tomorrow at 1.